Airplane Intel Podcast, Episode 37. This week, Don and I introduce the Eclipse 500 series of single-pilot jets. Then, we shift our discussion to the ins and outs of buying a jet airplane, plus aircraft ownership news, Don's Tip of the Week, and a new Alphabet Soup segment.
Welcome to the Airplane Intel Podcast, the show for aircraft owners, pilots, and mechanics. It's our goal to save you money and make your flying safer so you can get the most out of your airplane. Featuring the pre-buy guys with over 60 years combined experience flying, maintaining, and managing all types of aircraft. We will share practical advice, strategies, and tips to help make aircraft ownership simple, safe, and cost-effective. So stay tuned.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Airplane Intel Podcast, the weekly aviation podcast that focuses on the ins and outs of aircraft ownership. Now, it's our goal to help you make safer and smarter decisions when it comes to buying, maintaining, and managing your personal or business aircraft. I'm Adam, and I'm happy to be joined again by my co-host, Don. Hey, Don, how's it going today?
Well, welcome back. Yes, it's 2018. And dreams do come true. And this is what this episode is all about. Jet airplanes. How to buy one. No, you're not dreaming. Even if you can't afford to buy one, I bet you can qualify to fly one. It's just a matter of putting in the right amount of effort. So stay tuned, because we're going to tell you a little bit more about private jet aircraft.
Yeah, that's right, Don. But before we get started, I would just like to say hello and thank you to our latest patron, Christopher Towner, who is graciously helping to support the show with a small cash contribution each month. Now, in exchange for his support, our patrons get all kinds of bonuses, including early access to the show, bonus audio clips, special resources, and a lot more. Some even get free coaching calls and discounts on our services and other programs. So thank you so much for your support, Christopher. We really do appreciate it. Now, if you're interested in learning more about how to become a patron to help support the show and receive cool bonuses, check out the show notes at airplaneintelpodcast.com. And while you're there, feel free to reach out to us to send your questions and feedback. And as you know, we love hearing from you guys. And of course, be sure to check out the show notes, where you'll find all the links, videos, and other resources from today's episode and all of our past episodes. You can also find us on social media by searching Pre-Buy Guys, all one word, or send us an old-fashioned email to feedback@airplaneintelpodcast.com. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a lot planned for you guys today. We're going to start by talking about a very popular single-pilot jet aircraft known as the Eclipse 500. Then we're going to shift gears to discuss some of the details of buying a jet. Later, we'll get into Don's Tip of the Week about RVSM. But first, the news. Now, I don't normally like to cover news stories that you might be able to hear in other podcasts, but this one's important enough to hear twice. This is about the tax bill that was recently signed by the president, and there's a number of changes to it, but really what I want to focus on here are some of the business advantages that have changed as a result of the tax bill. First and foremost, the corporate tax rate has been cut from 35% to 21%. It also does away with an important tax planning tool used by those purchasing aircraft for business, which is the Section 1031 exchange. And basically what that is where you can sell one asset and defer the taxes to purchase another asset of equal or greater value. The bill does, however, allow for immediate expensing of new and used capital investments, such as an airplane. So in other words, you can write off 100% of the acquisition cost of a new or used airplane in 2018, if it's used for business, of course. And just to read a quote here from AOPA President and CEO Mark Baker, who says, quote, "A business aircraft is a good investment that gives companies and individuals flexibility and options." And of course, I couldn't agree with that more. So if you want to learn more about this, you can head over to our show notes and click on the article here from AOPA. Don, what do you have for us?
I got some news, Adam. We know how difficult it is to try to figure out whether or not you can afford an airplane, need an airplane, and then to buy an airplane. Wow. Our customers spend months searching the market. So we decided to make things a little easier for them. Yeah. We're going to be running a seminar in Orlando, Florida. And it'll be a three-day seminar, and it'll start February the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And we'll pick you up at the Orlando International Airport. Because if you're already down there, it won't be a problem. You could just drive over and attend the whole seminar or any days you want. So what is this seminar about? Well, we're going to get into the type of airplane that you're thinking about. Every person attending has a different type of airplane, whether it be a piston or a turbine. And we encourage you to bring information with you about airplanes you're thinking about buying. And what we're going to do for you is we're going to, for free, access that FAA file and have the airworthiness file and the registration file on hand in day number two. Yeah, and we're going to go over those files and show you what to look for. And we're going to answer questions about logbooks, and we're going to talk about mission profile, and we're going to have a little bit of interaction with the rest of the attendees, and so you can get your head on straight, right? Because you want to know, you know, a couple of things. First of all, you want to know if you really need an airplane. Yeah, and to save you time, whether you're an individual just going on vacation and visiting family, or if you're a company that needs to travel with several company employees for business. Yeah, it all depends on what kind of airplane you need. So we're going to kind of all get together, and we're going to see these different attendees and what they're thinking, because it'll help everybody. And then we're going to get down to the different types of airplanes and cost analysis and how much it's going to cost. And then we're going to, of course, give you individual consultation after the formal classes are over. And of course, we'll be able to discuss with you various problems that everybody has in buying an airplane. We're going to talk about dealers and brokers and airplane owners and the value of airplanes and the Blue Book values and how you assess it, and the maintenance records, and of course in jets we have, oh boy, we have the computerized aircraft maintenance records. And we're going to have some guest speakers, I imagine. If there's enough people there with turbines, we're going to have the computerized aircraft maintenance system people come down and answer questions. We'll have some short videos, but it's mostly focused on you and your airplane. And then, on the last day, we're going to get into the pre-buy on that airplane you selected, and all the various tests that are involved, and how deep should you go, and how much money should you spend before you either decide to buy or eliminate the airplane. Yeah, it could be more cost efficient if you eliminate the airplane after the flight test, of course. So we're going to talk about the flight test and the steps involved in the pre-purchase inspection, whether it be a single engine airplane or a corporate jet. So we have to have some people tell us if you'd like to come. So please, info@prebuyguide.com. Yeah, Adam, call him or call me. I'm Don, prebuy@gmail.com. Yeah, drop us a note and tell us your interest, and we'll send you the details and let us know whether or not you need lodging. And we'll figure it out and save you months and months of research, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right, Don. This seminar should be really interesting for everyone, including ourselves. And, of course, we look forward to meeting all of you guys that come down. Now, we're not quite sure about price yet or exact location. We're still working this out. But in the meantime, though, if you are interested in attending the seminar, please, as Don mentioned, send an email to info@prebuyguys.com. You can call me. My number is 904-290-3870. You can call Don. His number is 910-528-7769, or email him at prebuy@gmail.com. And as Don also mentioned, you know, this is for the weekend warrior pilot, as well as the business pilot, owners and operators of corporate aircraft, and even student pilots that are looking to purchase an airplane to build time once they get their private pilot's license. And of course, if you're an airplane owner currently thinking about selling, this seminar might be for you as well, because you'll get to see some of the things that a potential buyer would be looking for when they do a pre-buy on your airplane. So you can have the airplane a little bit more set up and probably save you some money in the process during negotiation, and even help you sell the airplane a little faster. So this is really for a lot of different people interested in purchasing an airplane, or like I said, just selling an airplane too. So if you're interested, we would love to have you. So get in touch with us and let us know what you think. And in today's Alphabet Soup segment, we are talking about RVSM, which of course stands for Reduced Vertical Separation Minimums. And basically what RVSM does is it reduces the vertical separation of aircraft from 2,000 feet down to 1,000 feet when flying at altitudes from flight level 290 through 410. Now, this rule came out in 2005 with the hopes of increasing the capacity of the airspace, thereby making it more efficient. And in theory, it does, because it cuts the vertical separation minimums in half. And so therefore, you can theoretically fit twice as many airplanes in there. But RVSM is a lot more than just an acronym, because as with anything in aviation, there are definitely rules to be followed. Aircraft flying in RVSM airspace need specially certified autopilots and altimeters. And of course, if you don't have that equipment, then air traffic control needs you to fly either below flight level 290 or above flight level 410 and maintain a normal 2,000 foot vertical separation between aircraft. Now, I've included a link in the show notes with more information on RVSM from boldmethod.com. So if you're interested in checking that out, head to the show notes to learn more. All right, here we go. The Eclipse 500 series is a line of multi-engine jet aircraft in the very light jet category. With a total of 6 seats, the airplane's cabin is similar to a cabin-class twin, such as a Cessna 340. Other aircraft in its class include the Phenom 100, Citation Mustang, the Cirrus Jet, and the new Honda Jet. The aircraft is 33.5 feet long with a wingspan of 37.7 feet and features a trailing link landing gear, a T-tail, and rear fuselage-mounted engines. Introduced in 2002 by Eclipse Aviation, the 500 was designed to revolutionize the private jet market with the invention of the VLJ category, or Very Light Jet, which is a jet-powered aircraft that weighs less than 10,000 pounds, bringing a welcome balance of performance and efficiency. Thought to be the proverbial best thing since sliced bread, deliveries began in 2006, and in 2007, Eclipse built a total of 104 aircraft, making more jets than any other manufacturer. Unfortunately, the success of the Eclipse 500 was short-lived thanks to poor funding, economic conditions, and financial mismanagement. Astoundingly, just 2 years after its first delivery, production of the Eclipse 500 ceased in November 2008. Bankruptcy soon followed, leaving many owners without product support and many more unable to recover deposits on promised aircraft. Following bankruptcy proceedings in early 2009, Eclipse Aerospace became the new owner and certificate holder for the Eclipse 500 aircraft. By August, the new company opened for business. Less than a month later, Eclipse Aerospace announced the launch of a new and improved version of the Eclipse 500 called the 550. A little more on that later. Now let's talk a little bit more about the aircraft itself. The Eclipse 500 is based on the Williams 5 jet, which was designed and built by Burt Rutan's Scaled Composites in 1997 for Williams International. It was merely meant to be a testbed and demonstrator for a new type of turbofan engine. The aircraft and engine debuted in 1997 at the Oshkosh Air Show in Wisconsin. The 5 jet had an all-composite structure with a forward swept wing, a V-tail, with each fin mounted on the nacelle of the two engines. Williams had no intention to produce the aircraft, but it attracted a lot of attention, and Eclipse Aviation was founded in 1998 to further develop and produce the aircraft. The airframe was significantly redesigned as an all-metal structure with a T-tail and straight wings. The main cabin shape is essentially all that was retained from the 5 jet. It was recognized that for an aluminum structure to be cost-effective, new manufacturing techniques would have to be developed. One of the primary processes used was friction stir welding. in which the skin and underlying aluminum structure are welded together rather than riveted, as traditional for other aluminum aircraft. Anti-corrosion bonding techniques were also developed. Originally, Eclipse selected a pair of Williams International EJ-22 engines, but as the aircraft's weight increased, performance was not satisfactory. So, Pratt & Whitney Canada agreed to participate in the project and modified its design of their PW615 engine. The prototype Eclipse 500 first flew with the Williams engines in 2002. The redesign to incorporate the new engines from Pratt & Whitney resulted in a significant delay to the development program. The first flight of the Eclipse 500 with the new engines occurred on December 31, 2004. An Eclipse press release says that its aircraft is the quietest jet aircraft and, quote, quieter than virtually all multi-engine turboprop and piston aircraft. The 500 is powered by two Pratt & Whitney 610 F-A turbofan engines, a variant of the slightly more powerful 615 F engines found on the Citation Mustang, capable of 900 pounds of thrust each. With a maximum takeoff weight of 6,000 pounds, that gives us a power-to-weight ratio of 0.15, getting us off the ground at about 2,400 feet with an initial rate of climb of 3,400 feet per minute. It can cruise at about 370 knots, burn 65 gallons per hour, and has a range of about 900 miles. While these numbers sound good on paper, they're not very realistic. In real-world flying, with wind, passengers, and varied mission profiles, you might be hard-pressed to experience that kind of performance, at least not all at once. Like many piston airplanes, there are compromises with the Eclipse when it comes to range versus payload. For example, with the seats full, the aircraft's range is almost cut by 40% to about 550 miles. I suppose that's not too surprising given the airplane's max takeoff weight of just 6,000 pounds. With an empty weight of about 3,550 pounds and fuel capacity of 253 gallons, which is 1,698 pounds, you only get a full fuel payload of about 500 pounds. Though max payload is just over 1,000 pounds, so if you can sacrifice some fuel, you can fill the seats. Bring the power back and fly about 500 miles with IFR reserves doing about 330 knots. As far as avionics go, all Eclipse jets come standard with a fully integrated flight deck from Avadyne called Avio, custom designed for the Eclipse. The system includes dual large-screen PFD displays, a massive MFD, TAWS, Skywatch, electronic approach plates, a 3-axis autopilot, and more. I suppose that seems pretty basic by today's standards, but the full integration of the avionics makes this system truly unique and intuitive. It also makes systems management simple and straightforward. Check our show notes for a cool video that goes into more detail on the avionics. Another unique feature of the airplane is its dual side stick control, with all the bells and whistles you'd come to expect from a modern jet airplane. You'll definitely get the impression of comfort and ergonomics when at the controls. You might even think you're piloting an Airbus. In place of the yoke is a stowable keyboard interface for the avionics system that makes loading the flight management system and flight plan quick and easy. Now, let's not forget about the Eclipse 550, which shares the same engines and fuselage as the 500, but greatly improved some of the shortcomings of the 500's avionics system and offered other improvements such as auto throttles, a unique feature to the Eclipse in this class, by the way, synthetic vision, and anti-skid brakes. The Eclipse 550 was made possible thanks to an investment from Sikorsky in 2010. The 550 begins at serial number 263 and ranges in price from $2 to about $2.5 million. Now, like I said, the 550 shares the fuselage with the 500, so regardless of the airplane that you are going to be flying, you'll be welcomed to the cabin by a classy and stylish clamshell entrance door that will have you thinking you're climbing into your personal Learjet. The cabin on the Eclipse 500 is, well, small. The cabin volume is only 109 cubic feet, which is smaller than a Beach Baron. In fact, it's nearly half the size of a King Air 90. However, it's more than enough room for you and 2 to 3 passengers to travel comfortably and in style. The 6th seat can be removed for additional baggage storage and elbow room. One luxury the Eclipse doesn't have is a lavatory, but with proper planning coupled with short trips, that shouldn't be a problem. The true niche of this aircraft is short trips in the 350 to 500 mile range. In fact, the Eclipse original design was intended for air taxis and owner pilots that actively fly about 400 hours per year, needing a little more speed without a huge jump in the price. In fact, you can purchase a well-equipped, good-condition Eclipse 500 between $750,000 and $950,000, which really isn't too bad, especially when you consider the average total time airframe is about 1,400 hours. According to the latest VREF publication, the price of the latest aircraft, being the 550, have decreased by approximately $100,000 in the last quarter. In general, the aircraft depreciates approximately $40 per airframe hour, which can either be deducted or included in your hourly operating costs. The two Pratt & Whitney 610 F-A engines have a 3,500-hour TBO and cost approximately $250,000 each to overhaul, giving us an hourly reserve of $72 per hour per engine. In terms of variable cost per nautical mile, we're looking in the $2 per nautical mile range, which is a lot less than a later generation King Air 90, and even some single engine turboprops. Now, what about ADs? As you know by now, almost all certified airplanes have ADs, though the Eclipse doesn't have very many. Here's an interesting story. On June 12, 2008, the Federal Aviation Administration issued an Emergency Airworthiness Directive, AD 2008-13-51, grounding all Eclipse 500s following an incident at Chicago's Midway Airport. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, the airplane was trying to land at Midway when the crew encountered a sudden shift in headwind, which the pilot sought to counter by increasing the power. The standard method. But when the pilot tried to cut power a few seconds later, the airplane touched down and the engines began accelerating to maximum power. The pilots overshot, gained altitude, and shut down one engine, eventually landing without injury or damage to the aircraft except for some blown tires. Later reports published on June 16, 2008 indicated that all 500s were in compliance with the AD and cleared to fly again within one day of the AD being issued. Pretty interesting. The company indicated that the final solution to this problem was a software change to increase the throttle range and prevent an out-of-range condition. Now, here's some more things to consider. Because the Eclipse 500 is a multi-engine jet aircraft, it is still subject to FAR 91.409 subpart E and F, which dictates inspection requirements. In this case, you'll have to file the manufacturer's approved maintenance program to include hourly and calendar month inspections for both the airframe and the engine. There are a variety of maintenance facilities and repair stations that can perform this work, including One Aviation's authorized service centers located in New Mexico, Chicago, California, and Florida. However, these are mandatory inspections and will really add up over time. If scheduled maintenance costs are a concern, you might want to consider a single-engine turboprop like the Meridian or TBM. According to the regulations, these aircraft, single-engine turboprops that is, only require an annual inspection, and you can see speeds, performance, and range similar to that of the Eclipse. In terms of overall maintenance, it's probably wise to expect to pay anywhere between $5,000 to $7,000 a year for various scheduled inspections, another $40,000 in maintenance and labor, and an additional $15,000 in parts. If you purchase a newer aircraft still under warranty, obviously most of these costs would not apply. Thanks to outside investment and Eclipse Aerospace's acquisition by One Aviation in 2015, product support and parts are easy to get. Additionally, many upgrades and modifications are available, including One Aviation's modernization program for the legacy 500 airframes. And I've also put a link to that particular program in the show notes. Now, depending on your flying experience and insurance limits, expect to pay about $15,000 a year for insurance. Being that the Eclipse 500 is a jet, you'll also need a type rating to legally fly it and requires annual recurrent training. Now, believe me, I'm not telling you all this stuff to scare you or steer you away from owning a jet aircraft. I'm merely trying to paint a realistic picture of owning a jet. Costs are a little bit more. Jet ownership is a bit more complicated than a piston airplane, of course, as well, but is still easily manageable. Of course, we can help you through the process of researching and buying the airplane through our pre-buy program, as well as manage the cost, maintenance, and responsibilities of jet ownership through our aircraft management program. For many, jet ownership is not only possible, it's necessary. Jet ownership brings new freedom, opportunities, and comfort, and of course, increased safety to the owner pilot and their families, as well as increased productivity, speed, and effectiveness for businesses large and small. Bottom line, if you're thinking about entering the jet market, there has never been a better time, and depending on your mission, the Eclipse 500 series is a good buy. And with that, Don's going to tell us about some of the airplanes for sale.
Well, thanks, Adam, for that information. So let's see what's out there, what you could buy. Well, I'm looking at a controller, and there's over 20 of them for sale, but just a few of them list their asking price, and one of those are in Turkey. So, yeah, pretty far across the ocean. Okay, so let's see. There's one here. Oh, $825,000. It's a 2008 Eclipse 500. Pretty neat. Let's see. It's part 135 equipped. And it had two owners since new. And let's see what kind of numbers they got on this one. It's got 650 hours since new. It has five seats. It doesn't have the six seats. And looks like it has a pretty good avionics package here. And the Garmin, it's only a Garmin 400W Wasp. And it's got Jeppesen chart and weather radar and TWASB, Skywatch, DCAS, dual mode S transponders, co-pilot package. Yeah, let's see, lower fuselage, skid pads, flight level 410 certified. So that looks pretty reasonable, because all the other ones, there's a lot of them out there, but they just don't list the price. So let's look at an Eclipse 550. Yeah, now we're getting into the newer airplane, a 2016, still under warranty. This 500-hour, 5-year warranty. It's only got 260 hours since new and 198 landings. And it's got the dual Avro AVIO integrated flight management system, and integrated with the PFDs and terrain awareness and warning system, that's TWAS, TAWS, traffic advisory system, TAS, weather radar system and color, co-pilot package, quick dining mass, 40 cubic feet of oxygen tank, little pilot is coupled, of course, XM weather, and a moving map. It has the WAS and LPV approach capability, dual altitude heading reference system, 2-2 BFIS, Iranium and SATCOM, and dual transponders, JEP chart kit you can put in there, and anti-skid brake system, has the glass windows by Pittsburgh Plate Glass, all VSM eligible. Of course, you have to get that certified after you buy it. The RVSM is still in effect, and hopefully before 2020 they will just accept ADS-B out, because it does the same as altitude reporting for above 29,000 with RVSM, and has a cargo net. Hey, that's good. Yeah. So actually the warranty is 36 months and 500 hours. So it's still under the warranty to 2019. So that's the scoop on that one. Well, we do have an excellent video in our show notes of an Eclipse 550. A gentleman in New England flying between two airports up in the Northeast. And it's quite informative. Starts off kind of slow, but he kind of runs you through the whole procedure, the startup and the flight. And he's talking to another pilot in his right seat who owns a Cherokee, I guess. But anyway, they have an interesting conversation on the flight, and he has quite a few nibbets of information about the Eclipse, and you could see how easy it is to fly the Eclipse 500, the new 550, the new one, and it's like a push-button airplane. It's pretty cool. He also mentions about the Citation 501SP, the older 1980s vintage and older. The Citation is a much larger airplane, and it does have a much larger cabin with more seating, and it costs a lot less money. So, but it does require piloting skills. It's not push button, right? So let's see, there's, oh my goodness, there's 24 of them for sale in the controller. Wow. And anyway, here's one for $395,000. You'll find most of them in the $500,000 bracket. And the question is about those expensive engines, what kind of time they have on them. So this one here is, it's got some pretty good numbers on it. Let's see, get down to all the numbers for you here. It's got 5,736 hours on the airframe since new, and the engines have 2,902 hours since overhaul. And so they're a 3,600 hour engine. So you've got 700 more hours to go. And let's see. Oh, the right engine, but well, they both have phase five inspection, which was the big one. They had that in September of 2014. So every 3 years, so that's due again in this September of this year. So that's the expensive inspection. And chances are you're not going to go to a citation center with an old airplane like this. You're probably going to have it done through a reputable repair station. And this airplane, of course, is single pilot certified, which means that once you get your type rating, the recurring instructions isn't as much as getting a single pilot 500 citation under a supplemental type certificate rating for a pilot. There's more recurring refreshing instructions for pilots on that. So there's three airplanes for sale. There's lots to choose from, and most of them don't list their price. So you'd have to do a lot of calling to find out on many of them. Well, last week's pre-buy on a Hawker 800 XP was a real eye-opener. I've done Hawkers in the past, and the price seems to be coming lower and lower. Well, yeah, this is a great time to buy a mid-sized cabin jet. Wow, it's unbelievable. It's the price of a new single-engine land airplane in some cases. Yeah, this was a great time to do it. And the pre-buy techniques, well, unfortunately, you know, we're dealing with customers in most cases who need the transportation, comfort, convenience, speed of a jet, and probably a tax write-off too. But they don't always know everything involved. And it seems like an awful lot of preparation before you buy a jet. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about buying a jet airplane. Well, you know, the big numbers are there. You know, the age of the airplane, the amount of time on it, the engine. But even today, it's even more important, the engine maintenance program, which guarantees an engine repairs and overhaul. And that costs a lot of money. In some cases, $500 or $600 per flight hour, just to ensure the engines. So that's important that it has it, and it has the right kind of coverage, because there's different levels of coverage. And then something that's very intangible, and that's the records. Yeah, you know, you see a pile of boxes in a lot of cases, cardboard boxes. Yeah, depending on how old the airplane is, how many cardboard boxes you got. It's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. And because there is a way of filing all these documents over the years. Because, as you know, a jet airplane gets a lot of maintenance. And if you're going to fly 400 or 500 hours a year in a jet airplane, you really need a mechanic on your team to do the minor inspections. Because you can't do all the inspections, because some of them require special shop equipment. And so anyway, that's where I like to start a pre-buy, is with the records. And because I really, you know, want access to just the parts of the airplane I'm interested in. And without knowing the history of the airplane and what I should be interested in, I don't know really where to start the pre-buy. Yeah, we can go up on a flight test first, like in smaller airplanes, because it's not that expensive. But in jet airplanes, operating at $8,000 an hour, a flight test is kind of expensive. So I like to start off with the records. Yeah. So I come up with a bunch of squawks on the records, because no sense reading them and forgetting them. You know, if I see something wrong, or if I suspect something wrong, I write it down into the report. And try to have the maintenance shop that maintains it, the broker, the prior owner, the pilot, whoever's, and I love it when a mechanic's taking care of the airplane, because he could sit down with me and we could go all through this, and he probably knows where these documents are that make all the parts on the airplane airworthy, documented parts. Yep, he probably knows right where they are. And of course, all these boxes of paperwork, well, to tell you the truth, probably half of them, if not more, could be thrown away, because we're talking about brake jobs from 10 years ago, every couple of years, and those brakes are long gone, and those parts are long gone, so the documents should be long gone. So that's why it's important to set up a filing system, and the filing system in aviation is the ATA code, Airline Transport Association code, from 0 to 100. And that's how your computerized maintenance reports about your airplane, because you can't remember all this stuff. So you have a computerized service, CAMP, Computerized Aircraft Maintenance Program, and used to be called CESCOM, now CESCOM is CAMP also. And there's a lot of independent people out there that make these programs, and every manufacturer, or some of the manufacturers, have their own programs. And they're all ATA code. So when you want to find a specific item, there's one of those numbers between 1 and 100 that item is in. And it makes it so easy. You know, when you see a logbook entry that somebody installs a part on the airplane, you can go back to the file and look at that number that's associated with the ATA code. And there's the document making that part a qualified part to put on that airplane. Now, before a part is put on an airplane, the mechanic is supposed to verify that it is an airworthy part by two ways. Firstly, he makes a physical inspection, which is basically just looking at the part, seeing if there's anything wrong with the part. And the second way is to have that document. Well, if it doesn't have a document, maybe it came as a bulk shipment, and then there's an invoice involved. And a lot of times these documents are mailed to the owner. And once he sells the airplane, that mail's in his file someplace, and those documents disappear. Yep, so it's important to try to keep all your documents filed in a correct file and put them in a safe place, preferably a fireproof type of safe, and not in the hangar usually. Usually someplace in a secure place where there's less chance of a fire. Yep. And then it's a good idea to digitize all those documents and put them on a USB drive, whatever kind of media you use, keep them in a few computers. And if anything ever happens to the physical documents, you have a copy. So that's what it's all about. We start, you know, looking and making sure there's no life-limited parts that are still on the airplane. Because if there's like a turbine wheel inside of an engine and it's life limited, holy mackerel, you thought you have 1,000 hours to go without taking the engine apart, but it's not airworthy in 50 hours from now because it's life limited. Who knows? So there's only one way to find that out, is to go over it piece by piece. Well, there's some information now. You need to manage the airplane or hire somebody to manage it. And we do that also. We manage airplanes and help you acquire a pilot and look after your fueling needs and your maintenance needs. And a lot of times I would fly in an airplane to maintenance and go through my checklist. And because a lot of these maintenance bases aren't down the taxiway, a lot of times they're hundreds of miles away, if not 1,000 miles away, depending on what kind of airplane you got. And it's kind of nice to drop into your routine maintenance inspections and have all the squawks fixed. So to keep the airplane airworthy. It gets awful expensive to ferry the plane around in between inspections to get defects fixed. So when it comes to a jet airplane, we're talking about the future planning. Yep, takes a lot of planning, and it takes some special skills to do that planning correctly. Yep, a lot of times the pilot could help manage the planning, but many times he's a busy, or she's a busy person, and doesn't have the maintenance background to understand all what's going on. So basically, what we need to do is to either go along on a flight before the big inspection comes up, if it's going to be done locally, which is probably unlikely. Probably you're going to have to fly to a larger facility to maintain the airplane on these hourly and weather inspections. So that's where we get on the airplane and do a flight test, just like the pre-buy inspection flight test, because we want to not only consult with the crew of the airplane, but we also want to make sure that we're checking all our boxes and get everything fixed at one stay, because we don't want an interruption of flight. Matter of fact, these Hawker jets have a really good dispatch maintenance record. A lot of the newer airplanes are like a computer, and I hear complaints all the time that you can't just turn off one little inconvenient system without rebooting the whole airplane and getting rid of those warning lights. That seems to be a new problem that's come up with these newer airplanes. Some airplanes have a really good dispatch rate, and the Hawker's one of them. Now, the Cessna Citations, they have special tracking, and some of the other manufacturers do also. They kind of track all the parts of the airplane and the failure rate, so this way you can get an idea of if your part on your airplane is probably going to wear out and maybe replace it a little prematurely, just to make sure you don't get grounded because something's not working. Yep, and then you have that minimum equipment list. It's kind of ignored by a lot of operators, and this makes the plane airworthy. Everything on here that's supposed to work for the conditions of flight should be working. Either that, or you should explain to the FAA that even though this convenience item's on here, it really doesn't have to work, and you could still fly the plane. So then you could legally fly the airplane to the next inspection to get those convenience-type items fixed. But without the minimum equipment list approved by the FAA, you really are flying, in a lot of cases, an unairworthy airplane, for insurance purposes especially. So that's important. So we take kind of care of those things. We look at every airplane as having to perform with the commercial standards for air taxi or whatever. We have a little bit of a slack here on a lot of the manufacturer's recommendations. And we consider them and bring it to the owner and operator of the airplane and explain to them what it's all about and what the chances are of having an inconvenience of a downed aircraft if you don't comply with it. And you got special airworthiness information bulletins, and you got upcoming AD proposals, and there's so many things. How the line crew watches the airplane is important, the way they do that. Noticing the ground operations of the airplane, how it's being towed, and how it's being fueled. There's so many things. Keeping track of all your expenses on the fuel wings, and my goodness. And then there's just the kick the tire type of thing, walking around the airplane looking for anything that isn't in proper order. Of course, a lot of that's done on a pre-flight, but, basically it new eyes sees new things. Or shall I say different eyes sees different things. Yeah, that's why I like different people working on the airplane, because everybody has their own little specialty and exceeds in their job of inspecting certain parts of the airplane. So it's kind of nice to, have different people working on airplanes, because all the big companies have the in the quality control department, which is the inspection department. And after the worker down there, the mechanic is done completing the task, the inspector comes along and makes sure it's done right by visual inspection, because he didn't stand there and watch the guy in most cases perform the maintenance. But he can make sure that that bolt has got a nut on it and that cotter pin is in there and things like that. So that's the scoop on managing an airplane. Yeah, we do that. I had a couple of neat cases. I had some jets that were with a large carrier, and they kept all the records on CDs, and like 14,000 records. Well, they had records for everything. So anyway, sorted through all those and put the important ones that might cause a problem in the future, especially I characterize that, and like instrument panel warning lights, and I put a, when a warning light come on in the past, why did it come on and what was the findings and who did the repair and what vendor was used to replace the part, things like that. And this way, if there's a trend there with the same shop or the same vendor replacing parts and it keeps failing, well, maybe it's time for a change. Yeah. So there's some information about owning a jet airplane that most people don't think about. Yeah. And it's not all about price. It's really about condition. Yeah, that's the big thing.
It's time for the tip of the week.
Well, here's my tip of the episode. I guess you might also call it some news, even though the news is a few months old. RVSM. Yes, if you're going to fly at flight level 290 and above, you need to be certified, because as you know, instead of a 2,000 foot separation of aircraft, they only have a 1,000 foot above that altitude. Now, there is a way you can do it. Matter of fact, on a lot of for sale aircraft don't have aren't current RVSM approved, which requires a big deal being approved by the local FAA, FISDO office, and whatever, and having a manual and Trump pilot training type stuff. And it's just a little involved. Most people do it through a commercial service, get it, the manual made up for them and get it approved. So what are we talking about here? Is this necessary? Well, in 2020, when ADS-B out is there, it tells them the same thing about altitude. So is it necessary? Probably not. And unfortunately, I just don't know yet if they're going to approve RVSM right away without going through the paperwork for airplanes that are already equipped with ADS-B out. I just don't know that yet. The other caveat is, in 2020, what if you're in an area where you don't have the air traffic control doesn't have the capability of seeing your altitude on ADS-B out? There might be some areas in the country like that. So then you need RVSM approval. Yeah, if your aircraft is approved, you can keep on at that altitude. Yeah, my latest flight in a Hawker, because it was a sales company owned the airplane, they didn't ask for RVSM approval, so we were limited to flight level 280. But we did ask for a higher 380, and we did get it for a little bit, 10 minutes or so. Then we had to come back down to 280. So I hope it changes quicker than 2020, but right now, and maybe to 2020, you're going to need RVSM approval for your airplane to go to those altitudes.
Hey, let's talk a little bit more about this meetup, this seminar in Florida, in Orlando. Wow, you bring the family and let them go to the amusement parks and you can get down to business with this airplane business. Yeah, that'll be the first Tuesday in February coming up. February the 7th. And we're going to have the seminar for 3 days, so you could stick it out if you want for the whole 3 days, the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and it ends on Thursday. And we plan on the first day is starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then the rest of the days will start at 9 o'clock in the morning, and Friday we'll get out a little earlier. And we're going to be there Tuesday at 8 o'clock in the morning, so if you want to come over and chat about these airplanes that we're talking about, either before the seminar begins or after it ends, we're available for more information on your situation. So this is a really good opportunity. If this is your first airplane, it's an excellent opportunity because you're going to find out so much about buying an airplane. And if you already have owned a few airplanes, we encourage you to bring the airplane you're thinking about with you, the information on it, all the information you have on it, because before and after the seminar, we can get into more detail about that particular airplane. And it's also good for people who are kind of interested in aviation and wondering what it's all about, or maybe you work for a big company and you're thinking about getting an airplane for your company. So you get the lowdown information. You know, it not only appeals to piston airplanes, but turboprops and jets also. Yeah, we're going to have segments of the presentation. And so it depends on how many people of each type of airplane is coming. But basically, we're going to take care of everyone's individual needs before and after the seminar. And it's also good for pilots. I mean, gosh, if you're a pilot and you might have a company close by and you like to kind of stay in your same area and get your ratings, you might approach the company and with this information you're getting and give them a good presentation about buying an airplane. It's also a salesman. Yeah, if you're a salesman or even a new salesman and want to get the scoop on what your customer is going to be like, we're going to have a lot of your customers there. And oh yeah, by the way, because we feel we're going to have quite a few of our listeners there, we do encourage you to email Adam. It's on the website, the email address, info@theprebuyguys.com. Email him and tell him you're going. And what he'll do is he'll send you a PayPal invoice, and either for the whole amount of the show, of the seminar, and either that or for $50 for a deposit. It'll be a non-refundable deposit, but that'll reserve your spot, because this way you're sure you can go once you pay that deposit, and because we won't be accepting so many people, because otherwise we won't be able to spend that individual time with you. And if we get quite a few in the different groups, we might have some guest speakers there covering other topics. And then even if you're a piston airplane guy, you might be interested in what it takes to operate a turboprop or a jet, and what computerized aircraft maintenance systems are about, and a whole bunch of things involved there. So you'll be hearing some of that stuff. And then we'll have like a group session too, and if you feel like it, you can you'll have time to tell the rest of the folks attending what your situation is and what your experiences is, and don't forget to bring your business cards. Yeah, you can hand them out, and we can have like a little bit of hangar flying there too, so that'll work out, and because we all learn from each other. Yeah. So we're looking forward to it, and if you fly in commercial airline, you have plenty of time now to get a discount ticket to get to Orlando, and chances are, if you get in at the right times, we could pick you up at the airline terminal and or satellite airport if you're flying in, and you won't have to rent a car. Yeah, and so we'll figure that out. just give us your information and put down that deposit, reserve your spot, and from there we'll go ahead. But it's definitely on for the first Tuesday in February, February 7th, and we're going to wind up the seminar on February 9th. Oh, yeah, by the way, if you bring an airplane that you're thinking about looking into to buy or whatever, and if you have a copy of logbooks, that's great too. You know, just bring everything you have about it. And day number two, we're going to give you a free FAA file on that airplane, the airworthiness and registration file. And then we're going to, of course, go over what these files mean and what to look for in these files. And because a lot of folks that pick out an airplane that call us up, even though we do, you know, 50 somewhat pre-buys this year. But anyway, another 20 or 30 pre-buys we couldn't do because there was something wrong in those files. And they really couldn't buy the airplane until that was straightened out. So it's important that we give you all the data on these airplanes. And they have a lot in common between single engine, turboprops, and jets. It's the same process of buying it. There's just different techniques you use. So looking forward to meeting up with our faithful listeners. And until next week, have a good week.
Yes, please do have a good week, and thanks again so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it, and we really love hearing from you. So if you have some feedback or questions for us, please don't hesitate to reach us at feedback@airplaneintelpodcast.com. And you can also let us know through email or through the website whether you're interested in coming to the February seminar that Don mentioned. Don and I would really love to meet you, and of course, I think we're going to learn a whole heck of a lot during that time as well. So it's a win-win for sure. And Florida's pretty nice that time of year, especially if you're from the north like I am, where you can really appreciate the warm weather. And if you happen to be a patron of the Airplane Intel podcast, stay tuned for some bonus audio that will be uploaded on the Patreon page here in the next little while. And if you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron, we would love to have you. And you can check out the show notes for a link to the Patreon page. Anyways, thanks again for being here. It really means a lot to us. We really love having you guys around to talk airplanes with, and hope to see you again real soon, and stay tuned for us next week as well. Until next time, stay safe and keep the greasy side down. Thanks for listening to the Airplane Intel podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope that you'll subscribe to the show and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter by searching Pre-Buy Guys. To access show notes, archives, and other free resources, head on over to airplaneintelpodcast.com. To get answers to your questions, drop us a line on social media or send an email to feedback@airplaneintelpodcast.com. You can also reach us by phone at 904-290-3870. And remember, owning an airplane doesn't have to be hazardous to your wealth.